welcome to Counterpressed on The Ringer and Spotify. I'm in the studio with Jilly Flatty and Kate Longhurst. Guys, I think it's the first time we've had where it's just the three of us in the studio.
This is the best threesome it could possibly be.
Well, easy, come on. It's only 9 a.m, Kate. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Jill, how's you? You're booked and busy, as per.
Yeah, very busy time, which is what we like.
Yeah.
We don't like it not to be busy. I've done an Easter camp, a half-term Easter camp at school.
How was that?
Yeah, busy, hard. Yeah. But it was, it's nice. I like obviously working with the children anyway, but it was just nice and chilled and we had good weather. So yeah. We was able to go outside, but no, it was good.
And then you were at Spurs yesterday.
Yes, was at Spurs yesterday. Nice stadium.
I love you and Robin Cowan together. Great duo.
Yeah, I just felt really...
You got great chemistry.
Yeah, it was very relaxed. I like, when I do my commentating anyway, I like just bringing a bit of fun to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes then I need to remember that I'm actually live on TV. The things I say. But I love working with Robin. She's good.
And we always get great tweets when you're on. People love it. They're always being like, we need more Jilly.
Can I just say, when I watched it back as well, because I didn't know you're on comms.
Did you have it on mute?
No.
She was playing a game. She was busy.
So I watched it back. But it actually brought a smile to my face.
Aww.
When I was watching it, the way you reacted to the goal, it just brought a smile to my face. And I was like, I love Jill's commentary.
You're so good.
It was the Leicester one.
Oh, yeah, that was a good goal, wasn't it?
And just the way you were like, wow.
It's
almost like what everyone else is seeing, but you're just sort of saying it, but like you're laughing at the same time, and it just makes me smile.
There are times when like things happen and the shot will like go or whatever, and I'll go like, ooh. And then I think, I want to say that, but imagine you've been under 10 years. Ooh.
Some people do that though. So that is a lot of like ex-pros sometimes don't realise that the mic is always on and they'll do a real like fan reaction of, people love doing this. Wow. And it's like, you need to just give it time, give it space. Yeah. But so you're professional, Jill, that's why.
I love it. Thanks, Kate.
Kate, big win over Watford.
Yeah.
Sent them down as well, which I didn't realise.
Sad. Actually, they're a decent team. I said that to a couple of their players. They're actually probably one of the best teams.
They try and play football. Yeah.
I think it obviously just goes against them a little bit in terms of, I think, their fitness and stuff, in terms of not being completely full-time.
I saw a lot of tweets about people, Watford fans, kind of frustrated about lack of investment because they've been up and down a couple of times now and they just can't really stay there.
Yeah, it's a shame because they've got some good players there and I think the coaches must do a good job with them because they do try and play nice patterns of play and stuff. It's probably just a little bit lacking in both boxes, I think, which is obviously a big part of the game. But it's a shame to see them go down because I actually think they're probably one of the better teams we've played this season in terms of what they can actually do in a game.
And Charlton now, third.
It's tough. It's going to be tough.
Two games to go.
Yeah, we're relying on, I think it's Lewis and Sunderland. I think that's who Crystal Palace has still got left to play. And we've still got to play Sunderland. So they're a point above us. So our plan is to try and take it to last day.
You just got to do your job, win your games.
Exactly, that's literally all we can do.
Put the pressure on. And Lewis, they are 3 points back from Reading, so they got work to do to try and stay in the league.
They need a win to try and stay in the league. So, you know, anything can happen, but realistically, we know it's very hard, but we can only make sure that we're taking care of our results, which we've done the last couple of games, so we'll see where it takes us.
Exciting. The open top bus is not over yet. We might still be able to do it.
No one's raining on our parade.
Jill, we have to ask about the marathon as well. People always want to know. You did a little marathon drop.
Well, yeah, Robin did.
During the comms yesterday.
Mm.
Which, come on, you know you love it. Because you got first of all, Jill, you got to raise the money.
Yeah, no,
so
I know.
Every little PR helps.
I got my mum panicking that the bailiffs from Stroke Association have got to come
knocking on the door. Where's the money?
Yeah.
What happens? You got to pay the difference, isn't it?
Well, I've got 4 weeks after.
Oh, okay.
So I got until like end of May, I think it is. Okay. So I'll have to just do some fundraising event after I've finished it.
Maybe you can flog some merch, signed merch. Or
parade my medal, come and get pictures with me and my medal, sell them. Do you know what I mean?
Cut some people's lawns.
Anything. Car washes.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
And the link, you put the link on your social media. So if people do want to donate, it's there. And how's the training going?
Yeah, no, it's all right. Yeah, I've done it. I've done a good couple of runs last week.
Yeah, what are we up to?
We're up to about 15K.
Not bad.
It's better than the 5K that you're rolling out with 5 weeks ago.
Yeah. I've never, ever run 15K in my life. Mm. Like I said, in a game, when we used to have our GPS on, I mean, I used to sit in middle centre back, I'd be like 8 kilometres. And a lot of that, probably about 6, 7 of that was walking. Do you know what I mean? So I've never run it. So I think... Yeah, I'm doing 15K comfortably as well. Like, I'm okay at the end of it. I could run further. And I'm hoping that I have a lot of adrenaline to get me through the remainder of the miles I need to do. And also, the crowd and that will hopefully push me on as well. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to the XL Centre this week to get my stuff. And then I'm ready. Well, I don't think I'll ever be ready, to be fair, but I'm ready to start.
And how's your body feeling?
It's okay. My left knee got a little niggle in it already.
Got a little niggle.
But I think it is my knees from football anyway. Like, yeah. I've had like tendonitis. My cartilage is wearing away. Like, it's holding on. But I'll do it. Even if I have to crawl, I'm finishing it.
Well, later in the week, once you get your number and stuff, we'll post it so people can track you. And I'm going to try and come down on Sunday and find you.
Give me a shout out.
But we have to say... Even your journey to get to the start line, it wouldn't be Jilly Flatty if you made it easy.
No.
Tell us what you're doing on Saturday and when you're coming back.
I'm working for DAZN on Saturday. I'm going to cover Lyon and PSG, the first leg. So I did try and get a flight home Saturday night, but the game kicks off late. So I can't get a flight home till 7 in the morning. So I land at Gatwick at 7:40, as long as there's no delays. I'm going straight to my mum's house. Get some breakfast in, get ready, get me gear on, and then I'm going to Blackheath. So my start time, I'm on the last wave, so my start time's about 11:20, I think. And then, then I run. So
straight from Gatwick to the start line.
Down work, though, can I?
Well, no. What if it does get delayed? What's...
I don't even know. Yeah, I'll have to go straight.
Cross that bridge. Yeah. Maybe your mum can meet you at Gatwick and...
Yeah, like, maybe zoom it. My mum don't speed, to be fair, so I need someone else to come pick me up because my mum will be sitting there doing the speed limit the whole way. So yeah, maybe not go home, maybe just go straight to Blackheath. But fingers crossed, I mean, it's only France. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's like I'm flying from Dubai or something.
Yeah, you just got to hope they're not on strike.
Just swim the channel first and then you'll
do a triathlon. Yeah.
Get Eurostar or something, you never know.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, good luck. I don't think we'll have you on the pod before then, but... We wish you luck. Hopefully see you on Sunday. On today's show, we're going to talk about Women's FA Cup semi-finals because there was so much drama yesterday. Two historic wins for Tottenham and Manchester United, who will now be facing each other at Wembley, Spurs' first ever FA Cup final. So that's very exciting. So let's get into it after this. So for once, guys, Manchester United actually made the most of a hot start and actually scored an early goal. This one coming in the first minute of the game. Lucia Garcia, who is such a physical player and she works hard, but so often she doesn't have that final product. And I think it's been a tough season for Manchester United. And there are a lot of players who haven't delivered and Mark Skinner's had a pretty difficult season and been under pressure. But they get this early goal and it does feel like it really kind of rattles Chelsea. And defensively, I thought they were poor the whole game, but they never really recovered. And the first 20 minutes of this game, it was just like pinball. The ball was just up in the air, back and forth, back and forth. And that, I think that lack of control for Chelsea as well, I think they really struggled with because the ball just didn't get on the floor for so long that it was really hard for anyone to kind of like find a bit of rhythm into the game. And the physicality as well, which I think we'll get into a little bit more detail shortly, I think that was a lot for them to handle. So it was a bit of a shock to see Chelsea's season takes yet another setback because Manchester United have been so poor this season. I really didn't expect them to win this game.
Yeah, they haven't been really competing with the bigger sides, have they? They've had some really good results in terms of teams that are like near the bottom or around mid-table, but they have struggled when it comes to the bigger teams that would probably expect to beat them at this point in the season. But I think when you get a 2-0 lead so early on, it's just like it changes everything, doesn't it? It gives you so much more to fight for. I thought they were really aggressive. I thought, you know, they tried to protect what they had well. Maybe didn't have as much control of the game as they would like, being 2-0 up. But I think sometimes when it comes to a cup game, it doesn't really matter how you play or what you do. It's about just getting the result over the line. And once Chelsea had got a goal back just before half time as well, I was thinking, right, well, you know, this could now kind of be Chelsea's opening back into the game. But it never really worked like that. I mean, I only watched it back. I didn't watch it live, but I watched it when I got back. And I just didn't really feel like Chelsea looks like the Chelsea that they have been. I don't know whether they've taken a knock because of the Conte Cup final, whether they haven't got the players in the past that they can rely on, like Sam Kerr, that can just sort of pull a goal out of nothing from a movement. They seem to be struggling a little bit at the moment. Not saying that they're in a position of, oh, like their whole season's falling apart, but these are sorts of games that Chelsea normally just sort of get the job done. And it was a real struggle for them yesterday, I thought.
And also, I think a lot of Chelsea fans will have watched games and know that when they do fall behind, they really struggle. And it's something that you know, it doesn't happen a lot, but in those short number of times it has happened, it's really tough to see them come back from those situations. Harry Edwards tweeting a stat in relation to that yesterday, saying Chelsea women's record when trailing by 2 goals in the first half under Emma Hayes: games 13, wins 1, draws 1, losses 11. So it's the stats aren't great, and I think Chelsea fans will see that, because if you think of some of those big games where that has happened, you know, they haven't won those games. So Chelsea fans know the situation when they do fall behind, especially by 2 goals, that it's probably not going to go in their favour. And I think they do struggle with those comebacks. And to be honest, yesterday they didn't create a whole lot of good chances. There were 2 good Mary Earp saves that I remember. One of them was, you know, made to look a bit more sort of glamorous and dramatic than it really was. But 2 good Mary Earp saves, obviously the goal, good finish. But in the last 15 minute period when Chelsea were really pushing, they didn't really create anything. There's that one Aggie Beaver-Jones chance that hits a side netting. But apart from that, there really wasn't much. Like, Macario hits the bar from a corner that she didn't mean to, you know, hit the bar. I think it was a bit of an accident in the end. But yeah, just not enough quality and creation. And that obviously makes life easier for United when they're trying to defend their lead. And that's why it's a bit of a strange game, Jilly, because it's like, I don't think United were incredible yesterday, but in those kind of one-on-one battles, they managed to come out on top. And I think there was a little bit of luck in a lot of moments, maybe a little bit of refereeing that worked in their favour as well. And I guess, you know, those sorts of games, that's where they have to deliver when they haven't in the past.
And I also think as well, like, obviously me and Kate know this better than most, is that when it's an FA Cup semi-final, all the other stuff's irrelevant. It's who turns up on the day. And I think with Chelsea, they've played against teams recently who have had chances. Chelsea have given them teams chances and they haven't finished them. And then they've sort of rode their luck. And then Chelsea always know that they're going to create. And so then they're able to put it away. But they gave United chances and United took them. I mean, obviously, I think as well, one thing probably we're not talking about a person is Millie Bright. I think she's such a huge loss for them. And I think, like, I like Buchanan. I do, but
she's inconsistent. Like, she had a period of a couple of good games, the Champions League, and then against Arsenal, was it? Or a handful of good games she's had this season, and then it feels like she's back to her worst again. I think she struggled in that game at Dagenham against West Ham. I think she was poor yesterday, and it's just that inconsistency that she has. It's like you can't rely on her.
But I think as well, like, when she was at Lyon, yeah. Obviously, you got in their league. It's Lyon and PSG, realistically. Like, as in there, that that's their game. That's their tough games. It's a walk in the park. The rest of their league, yeah. So you can bring that into league. You can't afford to do that. And I think she's really good if she's not under pressure, yeah. And she's doesn't have a centre forward who's going to be like a bully. And I think a lot of people online, when they saw Rachel Williams was starting, was a bit like, "What's he doing?" Rachel Williams bullied her. Do you know what I mean? And are you looking even for Rachel Williams' goal? Buchanan's got no awareness at all where Rachel Williams is, none whatsoever.
And the thing is, Neve Charles is bombing across because she almost knows, I'm going to have to attack this ball because Buchanan's lost her and I'm going to have to cover. And then she's not fast enough to catch it and it's a good header. And then they get that 2-0 lead.
Yeah. And I think Millie Bright, obviously we spoke about it for England as well. Obviously people will talk a lot about Leah Williamson coming back for England and how much she's been missed. But for me, I think Millie's one of them players who you don't necessarily miss until you ain't got her. You know, the organisation, that game there where you're coming up against United, who it's a tasty game. You need someone who's going to put their foot in, who's going to have a bit of an argy-bargy, a bit of a row. And I just think they've missed that leadership at the back. When you've got Buchanan, for example, who is not in the greatest form, or is, like you said, not consistently does it. And I also think as well, my opinion is a lot of people thought that they'd gone there and already won the game before the game started. I think they saw it as Chelsea are going to go through and it's whoever Tottenham and Leicester are going to, whoever's going to play Chelsea at them to, rather than it's not banker. FA Cup semi-final, any cup game, it's never guaranteed that you're going to go and get the result.
Yeah, definitely. And let's talk about that physicality, because Maya Letizia got away with a whole lot yesterday. Didn't even get a yellow card in this game, which was baffling. And it felt like Kirsty Dowell, the referee, only really clocked what was going on in the last 10 minutes when she started dishing out yellow cards left, right and centre. One to Mary Earps, time wasting. Nikita Paris picked up one. Lucia Garcia picked up one. Suddenly everyone was getting yellow cards. But I think what was frustrating is she didn't lay down the law early enough. And I think she lost control of the game and the physicality, because it was rough from the first sort of 5-10 minutes. Katie Zellum in on Lauren James so early to obviously try and rattle her a bit. And we, you know, that's part of it, that rivalry. Lauren James going back to her old club, getting booed as she comes off the bus. And she loves it. You know, she tapped the badge when she came off and her team lost. She plays up to it. She enjoys that. And she almost, you know, likes to create that environment. But I do think there needed to be an early marker from Kirsty Dowell to say, like, when this physicality, where the line is. And then you see Mel Letizia, that challenge on Ramirez where she just basically takes her out and there's nothing. And then it continues to happen. I think United finished the game with 4 yellow cards, but should have been more. As I say, Letizia, nothing. The two-handed push on Ramirez could have been a penalty. The Katie Zellum handball, I can understand a little bit more why she didn't give it, because she didn't move her arm towards the ball. Her arm was out there, which you could say, is that a natural position? Probably not. But I think that's less harsh for me than the push, which I think is more of a penalty. I think can understand why the handball, if she did see it, why she didn't give it. And then there was, I think, another challenge from Rachel Williams on Neve Charles that I thought that was a penalty as well. So, understandably, Chelsea fans really frustrated with how Kirsty Dowell refs this game, not just because of those penalties that they didn't get, but just because of the physicality, especially on Myra Ramirez, which a lot of them have felt like ever since she arrived in this league, that she has been, like, people have been overly physical with her and it's not been called up. And I think in this game especially, we saw that. I do think Mel Letizia now is getting a bit of a reputation, because there's been a couple this season, Jilly, we were talking about, where she's left things on people. And we think about Katie McCabe and Lauren James and how a lot of their situations have been clipped up and talked about, and sometimes picked up and other times not. But Letizia, another player that once VAR comes in, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And look what happened to Lauren James at the World Cup, because she lost her head and there was VAR and she got caught out. And that could happen to Mel Letizia, still a young player who's trying to push to be back in the England squad after getting dropped out of it. It's not a great look.
No, and listen, I'm a former centre-back here.
Arts, you know it well.
I love that side of things, yeah? Like, as in, I'm not going to sit here and say I was an angel when I was playing, because I would, but I would never do necessarily something off the ball. Well, I did once, but I got sent off for it. But
what was that?
I didn't actually do it off the ball, because the referee was standing however far you are away. I stamped on the girl's hamstring.
Chilly.
I was playing for Arsenal. No, but listen, Chilly. I was playing for Arsenal. It was in the Champions League, yeah?
Oh, I do, yeah. You spoke about this before.
Yeah, she tried to usher it out and then she fell over, started screaming. So I said,
against a Swedish team?
Spanish. I'm going to give you a reason to scream. Bosh, mate. But then I come off because I got sent off. Beatty come on.
Oh, yeah.
To replace me and then set up the winner.
Yeah,
so,
you remember you saying that and you're like, thanks to me.
Yeah, thanks to me taking one. But as I grew up, I did mature with things and I wouldn't like, I just think with my Letizia, several times she's done that this season now, she could really severely hurt someone. Like, it's dangerous play. So if I'm a United coach or whatever, I'm saying, I'm sitting her down and I'm talking to her and I'm going to say to her, listen, I understand you want that physical battle and when the ball's coming in and the ball's being delivered, get tight to Ramirez and have that argy-bargy, whatever. But you're deliberately going with like your arm up to smash someone, to hurt someone. Like, she could have severely hurt if she connects with her in the wrong place, yeah? You're going to potentially end someone's career, really, if she catches her nasty. And it's like, someone needs to get her in and say to her, this is, you can't do that no more. Because, yeah, obviously you're looking at like the Lauren James when she does stuff, it's at Katie McCabe, it's viral. But then no one really says about it. And then I do think as well, commentators should be picking that up. Because yesterday, Siobhan Chamberlain was talking about it and goes, oh yeah, well, it's a coming together. It's not a coming together. Marley Tissot has gone out of her way to literally take Ramirez off her feet. Like, say it there and then on the telly that you don't agree with that. Do you know what I mean? Because I was sitting there watching it and I was like, that's disgusting. Like, I'd hold my hands up and I'd say online or I'd say on the telly, that's not good enough and something needs to happen. And if VAR was there yesterday, she'd be off. That should be a straight red. So it's until that does come in, United, I think, have a responsibility because they will see that and know that that's not just a one-off. That's several times it's happened now. You need to get her in, you need to sit her down and show her ways to do it in her game where she's not doing that but still able to compete and have that 50-50 or the aggression or owning your centre forward, but you don't have to do that.
I think yesterday as well, there was a deliberate tactic that Letizia was always going to be one-on-one with Ramirez because she was coming way out of the back line in order to track her, in order to hold her and like do whatever various sort of dark arts she was doing to either try and mark her out the game, break up play, whatever it was. But you can do that and do man-on-man under the guidance of your coach without doing stuff which is not in the spirit of the game, which is against the rules of the game. We also got to talk about Lauren James getting Millie Turner in a headlock. Some WWE moves. That wasn't spotted by the referee. And you can kind of see in a way why, because the camera angle even didn't quite see that, because you see the back of Lauren James trying to get the ball and you wouldn't really be able to see Millie Turner in a headlock and then you see the camera position from the photographers behind the goal and you get that. But that was another kind of, you know, head loss moment that you feel like we've seen a lot from Lauren James, unfortunately. And, you know, she can take it and she can give it and that's kind of the best that we see of her. I think she probably could have lost her head even more yesterday under the pressure and under the kind of rattly attempts by Manchester United players. And that was the worst of it. I always feel like I don't know if Chelsea handle those particular environments very well. I think when they do face teams that try and sort of break up play with, you know, any means necessary and those kind of intense, like rattly environments, I think a lot of their players do show a bit of inexperience in those scenarios and they get frustrated and they let the moment get the better of them. And I think that's something that's been really interesting in this kind of high intensity, pressurized end to the season is maybe that's a way that teams know that they can kind of play Chelsea is if you haven't necessarily got the quality that they have. And think about the players that finished on the pitch. Kirby, Macario, Ashley Lawrence came on. And to be honest, I think she should have started because Perisay had a poor game. But like those moments where you need people to just kind of be cool and hold it a little bit, Chelsea sometimes just let everything and let the environment like get the better of them.
It is certainly something that's becoming a bit of a pattern. I think what doesn't help is that with the whole Mel Letizia thing as well, it's almost like a cheap shot, like a sly underhand thing where because it's not near the ball, then it's not as easy to recognise maybe for the ref because maybe they're looking at something different. But then Chelsea players can't, like, it's hard to not react off that when you feel like you're getting a little bit of a disservice against you. But I think other teams looking at that will go, well, that's the way that we've got to do it. Because let's face it, Chelsea have been the best team in England for the last however many years. Teams are going to find a way of going, well, we're going to have to do something a little bit underhand to try and get that advantage against them. But it's difficult if they keep reacting to it or don't have full control of the situation, then teams will find that way in. And I think the more times that other teams are doing it and other teams can see that happening, it's almost like they don't trust in themselves to actually turn this around or keep composure, keep calm in the games. They're still rising to it, and it's like they're fighting against themselves as well as the other team that they're playing now, because it's like they've got a battle against themselves of not reacting to stuff. And you do see that they're kind of like quickly reacting to something, like, I don't know, like snapping at things. Whereas before, when I've played Chelsea, I always think, okay, even when they've struggled in games, they've stayed quite calm, and within 15 minutes they could score 3 goals and the game's over. Whereas they haven't got that at the moment, and I don't know if that is because they're missing players on the pitch, but you still look at their squad and they've got unbelievable players that are either coming back or are playing now.
Maybe it's going back to that leadership. Millie Bright, you know, she's captain of this side, and there's been a, you know, weird rotation on the captain's armband, but she's a level-headed player, you know, 99% of the time. And not having that leader to say, like, everybody calm the hell down, then I think that does make an impact, because that guidance on the pitch, and you can understand when referee decisions aren't going your way that you start to lose it a little bit, because you feel like, what is it going to take for us to get a call and multiple penalty claims and all that kind of stuff. But it was a tactic that really paid off and played into Manchester United's hands. And two very similar goals. It felt like from the outset, the tactic was get it out wide, cross into the middle of the box and try and win those aerial duels. And they did it. Whether that's enough to then win them an FA Cup, I don't know. I mean, Gilly, how much do you think this changes the pressure that was on Mark Skinner? Because last week, during the week, there was lots of talk that he'd been offered a new deal. And in his press conference before this game, he said talks are still ongoing, blah, 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 blah. How much do you think this result changes the situation with Mark Skinner? Because I don't think there was really a lot in that game to say, oh, okay, things are clicking now. I think it was two chances. They took both. One of them a brilliant assist from Ella Toon, who has not been at it this season. But I still think they're a very troubled, disappointing side. And maybe that's even more so why it's so shocking from Chelsea. But it's the first time Manchester United have ever beaten this team.
Yeah, and I think, not that people have short memories, I don't, but I think everyone's buzzing because they've got to the FA Cup final. If he goes to that FA Cup final and he does not beat Tottenham, yeah, then the pressure, if it's going to even be the same or it's going to be a lot higher to get rid of him. If he goes there and wins, I do think it's one of those scenarios and situations where he could potentially paper over the cracks that are there. I don't think Mark Skinner is suited to Man United. I think he is better with a team. Like, I've always talked about his time at Birmingham. He was better with a team that had not the name big players, but he got that team to compete and to fight and to be not nasty team, but they were just a very physical amount of times you used to go away, play Birmingham away. You had Joe Potter, Jade Moore, Remy Allen in that team. You'd think, several times when we was at Chelsea, we lost to Birmingham away because that was like our bogey team. I think he's suited to that, where the pressures are not higher, where you're expected to win the league or expected to get into Champions League. And that's no disrespect to him as a manager. That's just how I think he suits that style of getting a team like that. So I think if he beats Tottenham, then I think, he probably saves himself his skin a little bit. If he don't beat Tottenham, though, then no, it's going to be a disappointing season, because really, realistically, United fans are going to go there and United are going to expect there to be the favourites in that game. You don't turn up, you don't win.
And they played well in that FA Cup final last year and didn't win it. And it was the same old story with those moments where they didn't take their chances. And then, you know, up pops, Sam Kerr with the winner. And yeah, there you go. Tom Gary tweeting that it's the first time since Liverpool won the 2014 WSL title. Kate was there, remembers it well, that a club that isn't Arsenal, Chelsea or Man City is going to win a major women's trophy, which is really big.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in a country that likes to say it's got the most competitive women's domestic competitions, it's important that you see someone else there. And Manchester United getting to the final last year was obviously very big for that club. And West Ham getting to the final a few years ago, unfortunately losing to Man City, was a big moment as well. So we've seen, you know, pockets of this being able to happen. But yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see a new team win the FA Cup. So that's a perfect segue to talk about Tottenham Leicester next. Jill, you were there. Tottenham beating Leicester, coming back from a goal down. And I thought this was going to be a case of Tottenham ruining missed opportunities and missed chances, because they dominated this game at home in front of a big crowd. It was the perfect kind of scenario for them. But they missed those early chances. Salim Bezet with two very good chances, one straight at the goalie, one not on target. And I thought, okay, like there's going to be something around the corner that means they're going to regret this. Lo and behold, Rantala with yet another massive finish this season. I do think, if I'm being harsh to Becky Spencer, maybe she maybe could have done a little bit better. I think she does see it late, whether it's Bula in front of her or the shadow or whatever. I think she does see it late, and therefore a hand that she could have got, she doesn't get. But it's still a very good strike from Rantala. And that does, for a brief period of time, kind of knock Spurs for six a little bit. But they recover. They have tons of the ball. But it was a sloppy game for so long. Like, it was poor quality for a lot of the game. And that's why I thought, oh, okay, Leicester are going to hold out here, because Tottenham were just a little bit all over the place after the goal. And that scrappiness was sort of playing into Leicester's hands.
Yeah, and I think obviously Tottenham did start bright. And they obviously had their chance that they didn't take. And then Leicester grew into the first half. They had the momentum. And then obviously Rantala's goal, like, oh, it was like a rocket, though. I mean, I stood there and I didn't say it near the microphone, but I did go, wow. Because she, like, left foot, right foot, don't matter to her. She cuts in.
She's got a good strike on her.
Yeah, and I did, obviously, my first thought was I didn't know how much Bex did see of it, because, I mean, I think the defender should do better with her, because she's sort of jockeying her, but she's not really showing her either way. As soon as she comes inside, it's literally, it was like deja vu of watching the Liverpool game, because she'd done exactly the same. She cuts inside and she smashes it past Rachel Laws, who also couldn't stand a chance with it. So yeah, I think if you know that, and you've highlighted that in the, like, Spurs, really, the defender should have looked at that and seen that goal from the previous one and gone,
yeah, I think it's Nilden. She doesn't do a good job.
No.
She completely loses her. And then at the last moment, she's almost like, she gives up on it.
Yeah.
And then she's got all the time.
But as soon as
world.
She cuts inside, then that's when you have to go and step, because you know she'll punish you. And obviously, listen, it's a great strike. And then as it was going on in the second half, it was sort of, Leicester got hold of it again. Tottenham, when they broke, I've said, like, with Jessica Naz, in the first half I felt this, and I felt in the second half. Now, like, a bit like when you play with Gemma Davison, who was absolutely rapid, yeah, but slowed the ball down, as in to sort of allow the defenders to get back to then try and beat the defender 1v1. Whereas I was watching Jessica Naz yesterday, and I'm like, you've got so much space in front of you, just go. Like, but it seems she's waiting for a defender to come so then she can try and beat her. And then I thought, when Drew Spence got took off, I thought, in all honesty, I thought Naz should have come off instead, because I thought she looked so tired.
I thought she was going to come off. And when she stayed on, I thought, that's a huge mistake, because her touch was all over the place. Her final product was all over the place. And she looked leggy. And then credit to Villaham, sort of, that she ends up taking her chance really well and rescuing the game.
Yeah, because I think he probably sees it as, listen, she just, it's one of them ones where you are tired, but when you have the ball, you find the adrenaline, you find the energy from somewhere. And fortunately, obviously for him, obviously she stayed on, and obviously she gets really composed finish, by the way. And it comes from, this is what I said in the game, that goal come from Leicester not winning the midfield battle. The ball was bouncing. No one wanted to put a foot on it. No one wanted to connect with it. Josie Green, who in my opinion, she's not a centre-back, but had a really good, actually a decent game there, in all fairness, was handling Beth England and then Marv Thomas when she come on. makes then a mistake. She don't connect with it. And then obviously Jessica Naz runs through, really composed finish as well, literally just passes it into the bottom corner. And then I think I felt then when it went to extra time, obviously with the substitutes, I thought he made really good substitutions as well. For me, Leicester looked like they were shot. There was like O'Brien, I think, come on and done really well. And I thought she could have come on a little bit earlier because she was causing Ashley Neville a lot of problems. And obviously then Martha Thomas then gets the winner.
And she had that chance at the end of normal time where she could have a really good save from Cop. Really good save.
And I think if maybe Martha hits it with a bit more because she sort of toe punts it.
And she was slipping as well a bit. Yeah.
Then potentially, but I mean, it's an incredible save, the way she gets down and tips it round the post. But we've all been there in games as well where with Martha Thomas, like I've been their defender, you don't know a player's coming. Martha Thomas just wanted that ball more than anyone.
But she's always like that. You can always rely on her getting in those positions, being physical, pressing so well. At the start of this season, we saw a consistent finishing from her and then it hasn't been the same. And I think that's because Spurs haven't created enough for her. But I think it was amazing to see her almost come full circle and get that winning goal, because that is a moment that will sum up a really strong season for her and she deserves it. And I think, you know, it's all that hard work that she's always puts in paying off in a moment that really matters, rather than it just contributing the season where Spurs finish mid-table. You know, it's like getting them to Wembley.
Yeah, but I said that as well. I said good things happen to good people. And for me, Martha Thomas is a very good person. Obviously, played with her at West Ham. We both have. She's a really good girl. And, you know, obviously she went to Man United. It didn't work for whatever reason. Very low in confidence. Comes to Tottenham. And also I think as well, she comes to Tottenham with Beth England being injured. She gets the start. She bangs in the goal. Beth England comes back. They're sort of struggling to work with them both together and had to get the best out of each other. We've both been on the pitch. So for me, I was buzzing for her. I was smiling when she scored, because I just think, like I said, she deserves that. So she's so committed and so a dedicated professional. And she just stays switched on. She's a live wire in the box. And for me, she just wanted that ball more than anyone else in the box. And yeah, she deserves it.
Kate, we've got to pour one out for Grace Clinton, because she's not going to be able to play in the final. It's absolutely gutting. And she has been Tottenham's best player this season, by far, most consistent. She has been a breath of fresh air. And the whole question has been, how can this girl not get a game in the Manchester United side, given how badly Manchester United have played this season? You look at her performances and her performances for England as well. She helps take Spurs to Wembley, and because they're facing her parent club, Manchester United, she's not going to get to play at Wembley in the final. And it's gutting, and she's obviously gutted. Robert Villaham's gutted for her. And she seems really at home at Spurs. And you can understand that Manchester United are probably going to call her back, because they've obviously look at this player that we were sort of sitting on in the youth teams and not maybe giving as much opportunity to. But yeah, such a shame for her.
Well, it's kind of what you want from a loan player, isn't it? In terms of when she's been loaned out, Man United want her to do well and prove that she can play at that level, which she more than has done this season. But for her individually, I mean, as players, I mean, we've played for years, like, you don't know how many opportunities you get playing in an FA Cup final. And I think when you're one of the key ingredients to that as well, and one of the key parts of the team, that you then don't get to have the actual last day fun. Like, that's what you've worked hard towards. Especially at Wembley, I can imagine it'll be close to a sellout. You know, it's two well-supported teams. It's just gutting for her, but I think also the impact that it'll have on Tottenham as well is a huge loss, because, like you said, she has been one of their key players. Certainly when they've been a little bit struggling, she's popped up with a goal or she creates things. She's such a driving force in that midfield. She can play off the left, she can play central, she can play in a variety of positions. And yeah, I think it's just a bit unfortunate that it's Man United, but I think for us as neutrals, if you want a good cup final, it probably was going to be Man United Tottenham for it to be the closest cup final, and where you can't maybe call it, because I think on any day, either of those two teams win. So I think in terms of for the neutral, it's a great FA Cup final, but obviously for Grace Clinton, it's awful for her, isn't it?
Jilly, you kind of touched on it a minute ago, but do you think a Grace Clintonless Spurs facing Manchester United, do you feel like it's kind of, I kind of feel like it's Manchester United's FA Cup to lose now?
Yeah, I feel Man United will be going there as favourites. I do think it's, listen, I think it's hard. I think it's tough on Grace Clinton because she's a driving force for that Spurs team. And I know obviously people talk a lot about Beth England, but Grace Clinton is the link, the player that gets it from the back up to her, up to Beth England, up to Bizet. And yeah, it's gutting really. And it'd be, I'd say for a neutral, it'd be nice if they Man United go, go on, Grace Clinton, you can play. But they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that at all, which you can understand why they wouldn't do that. But yeah, I think now we'll see. It's a chance for other players to come in. And then potentially you could see now. I mean, listen, the substitutions, Grace didn't come off yesterday. And the substitutes that come on, they've done really well in the midfield. So I just think it's about learning now how, when you do attack that game, when you don't have Grace Clinton, how do other people step up in there? But, and I sometimes think in this scenario, well, I don't think Man United are the massive favourites compared to, say, when we was at West Ham coming up against Man City. Like, of course, listen, we didn't have a hell in a chance. We stayed in the game until half time. But we didn't have that. Yeah. Whereas I think
anything can happen in this one.
I think they are favourites, yes. But I do think it's going to be a lot closer than previous finals where there's a favourite and an underdog. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. I think it'd be a good game. I really do. And I think we've seen United don't necessarily have that consistency. Tottenham, yes, have fought this season, but there's probably not going to be the pressure on Tottenham as there is on United. So, yeah, we'll see.
Grace at Lesbian Stacey always has really good questions. But given Emma Hayes' bizarre midweek press conference where she decided to read a poem in response to whether she kind of regretted slash had changed her mind on her Jonas Adevel push in the Conti Cup final, Lesbian Stacey has asked, any poems to describe each team's performance over FA Cup weekend? Any poems, Jilly?
I don't read no poems, bro. Come on. I don't even read a book.
I was going to say.
Maybe, but I'll give you time on that one. Roses are red. United are two. Mark Skinner has a plan for you.
I was going to say, Mark Skinner, they're coming for you.
Yeah. They're coming for you. That's probably better. A good question, actually, from Joanna Pearson. So, two FA Cup semi-finals, two keepers going up in the dying seconds, vibes on a scale of one to Arnold Clark Cup. We do love when keepers go up. Didn't result in anything.
Yeah, but it's so fun.
It's so fun, isn't it?
Love it when a keeper goes up.
And actually, in that Leicester game, Spurs nearly scored from that.
Yeah, they did break. And I was laughing, right? Because you had like three players. You had, I don't think it was, but there was basically like three or four players chasing this ball down. And it was like,
you know, it was like P-rolling, wasn't it?
I mean, you know when you play like FIFA, yeah?
Yeah.
And you do like the sprint, which is like the back button, I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's literally like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do trying to sprint. And I was, but they weren't going nowhere because I think it was like so late on in the game. But I was hoping for a goal, but no, it didn't happen.
Yeah, sad. And then I was hoping as well that if it'd gone to penalties, Leicester might have brought on Yanina Leipzig because she's quite good at pens. So I was hoping we might get a fun little goalkeeper sub, but alas, no pens, which is annoying because we'd made it that far. Jilly, you'd been there for about 4 hours and we didn't even get penalties.
Yeah, I was glad there was no pens flying because I had my cab driver text me, he's going, what's going on?
Really?
Yeah, he was panicking because I said, listen, mate, I've got another half hour, I've got extra time.
Yeah, but surely he goes when you go. So
yeah, but he was, works.
Yeah, I think he was probably trying to get home for his Sunday roast dinner flow. Do you know what I mean?
Sorry, no sympathy for me. And then a good question from one Jeff Longhurst,
who's that?
Number one dad, number one fan. He said, nothing to do with the cup, but what do you think will happen to attendances next season when Sky cover 44 matches and start moving the timings around? Now, obviously, last week, confirmation that Sky and BBC were renewing their deals for a year in this kind of interim before the new co really gets going. I mean, they should have done that about 6 months ago and not tried to negotiate a whole new deal, but whatever. In hindsight's a wonderful thing, but it would have saved themselves a lot of hassle. Anyway, it means we've got a bit of consistency for another year ahead of this big new change in the summer. But Jeff does bring up a good question because we've seen it a little bit with these like 6:45 games, which are annoying for fans, but the TV product has been prioritised for me in the right way because, you know, that apart from Arsenal, the away football fan culture hasn't really grown as much. So I get for Arsenal fans, away from home being put on a 6:45, it does hit because they're probably the best away culture of the lot in the league. But for a lot of other teams, it unfortunately doesn't make a whole lot of difference whether they're that kickoff or not. But what we do see with football and TV is that games do get moved around as a result of TV. And with the WSL, there's always been such a late decision making on games. Part of that is when teams are in Europe or like there's priority around kickoff times and everything like that. And I think that's more frustrating. I think there needs to be more consistency with how clubs and broadcasters and the league negotiate, hopefully with Nuko laying down some rules, because that's where everything falls up, where you've got teams kind of battling out for what sort of kickoff time works best and broadcasters chipping in and the league chipping in. And it gets messy. I do think there needs to be consistency of like who holds the ultimate power and who are you working to benefit rather than just one group having more power than the other.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like it's not as difficult for me, but obviously I do want one of those is, well, actually both of them actually employ me for work. So 6:45, I'm there, mate. Either way.
Anytime, any place, Jenny will be there.
But I do. And I think even when I was playing, like we'd find out maybe a couple of weeks before, oh, this game's now getting changed from this day to now Sunday night. And it does, in regards to your schedule as well as a player, you might think, oh, well, hold on a minute, we're playing 2 o'clock on a Sunday, now we're playing later, that potentially could impact the next day or whatever. I just think everything in football, it all comes down to communication and early enough.
In life, actually.
In life, in fly flow. This is a deep chat now. It's all about communication. And yeah. I just think sometimes that just, there's a lack of it. Mm. And I also think sometimes there's a lack of understanding for fans. Yeah, because like that is 6:45 is a late kickoff, more so for children if they've got bed, then they've got to go to bed because they've got school the next day. Even for adults as well, to be fair.
I was
going
to say, Jilly's in bed by 7.
Yeah, Jilly likes to be tucked up by 9.
I used to struggle with the night kickoffs as well because I'd think, oh, I'm like 8 o'clock, I'm like in bed and I'm still playing. I do see that. I just think for fans as well, like you just have to stay on it and have to keep coming to support and keep going out there to support your teams. It's easy to stay at home and think, oh, I don't want to go out and that. But
well, also for Sky, and I get it, they've got so much football on. So in order to have the best window to get viewers, sometimes it's a tight squeeze. And with Premier League having 12:30 on BT, TNT, EFL having 12:30 on Sky, so therefore, like, WSL has to work around it. And then same with Super Sunday. Like, there's not a lot of window in that schedule to fit in live games. And so I get sometimes the kickoffs need to be moved around a bit. But like you say, it's all about timing. It's all about giving fans enough of a warning. And to be honest, if we had a better train network that actually ran quite well, probably wouldn't be an issue. But it's because fans have to get to places that aren't necessarily that hard to get to, but Sunday trains are so unreliable.
Well, you can't get a Sunday train these days, can you? Yeah, exactly. It's all bus replacement.
And yeah, so I don't think that helps. And I think that's another one that that fans have to deal with. But got to keep the away fan culture growing. Arsenal doing such a big job this season of setting that standard. And I think other clubs are building as well. There's obviously like diehard groups around everywhere. Chelsea as well are building theirs, but we'll have to wait and see next season. But I have to say, I love seeing more games on TV because it means you can just watch more. And I think for the overall growth of the game and the league, I think that is beneficial, but you can't just completely ignore fans because of that. So thanks, Jeff. Always, you know, Pod's biggest fan.
Go on, the boy.
And actually, he was tweeting about, we got your mum going on the Karen Carney.
She did. And she
train
even rang
well.
Me and said,
she rang you?
Yeah. I listened to the pod and what did you say? That I didn't go on about, I had forgotten about it. But then when you brought it up, I did. It did make me bring it up again. I was
all
like,
the way,
oh, yeah.
Came all the way back to her. Jilly, good luck for marathon Sunday.
I hope I survive, guys.
You will.
I'll be in Sunderland. So if you haven't finished by the time I'm back from Sunderland, we've got issues.
I'm still going to be running.
I'll get the coach to pick
you
up on the way back.
Also, Jill, we planned to have you in on Monday, but I'm feeling like that plan is getting less and less chance. Maybe should we write you off for that Monday show? Because I feel like the people will want to hear how the marathon went.
Yeah,
but get you a trolley, like just roll you in.
Whether or not you can get here is another thing. So that's the issue. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll touch base.
We'll touch base.
I might
on
go
that.
Like live down my Instagram or that while I'm running
do.
It.
And post us your number that you're going to be running with.
Yes,
so that people can track you. We'll also post that. And then if you want to track Jesse in the Boston Marathon, which by the time this pod comes out, they'll already have been started, but you can they won't have finished yet. They're not that quick. So that is starting at 3:50 UK time today. Jesse's number is 16507. So if you want to track their run, please do. I think it's on TV as well, so do that. And then one final shout out, because our good friends at Baller FC are doing a little party for Lewis ahead of their challenge to try and stay up in the championship. It's for their game against Crystal Palace, which is this weekend. So if you do want to go and watch that, check out Baller's Instagram. It's called Party at the Pan. So if you guys don't know Baller as well, a lot of people in London will know them well. They do amazing screenings and events for women's football. They hosted the live pod that Jilly was a part of for our good friends, Big Kick Energy. So yeah, check out them. Get down to Lewis. It's crunch time of the season. All aboard the Charlton. Hopefully. And you know, if Lewis win in the Party at the Pan, that's a massive favour. So there's a lot
on the
line.
Yes, if you can go down and support, that'd be great.
Yeah, go down and support Lewis and help Charlton, because we still have big, big plans. All right, Jill, good luck with the last of the training.
Thank you.
We're all behind you.
Yeah.
Kate, get some sleep.
Yeah, thanks.
And good luck at Sunderland. Are you going up in the morning? Are you staying over?
No, we'll stay over.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I was worried you might have to get up at 4 a.m. How long's that drive? 8 hours? No.
I
six?
That's a big
seven.
Are you driving for it to be 8 hours?
No, but it's a coach.
Are you driving?
No, but coaches are slow.
Reversing.
And you've got to stop over.
Durham took us a good 6.5, I think.
See, there you go. And is it further than Durham?
Yeah.
See?
Oh, we are. Well, then 8 then.
Coaches don't go fast.
I created a quiz on the way to Durham.
Who's faster? The Buster Sunderland?
I think we should start taking votes.
Yeah.
You'll do a poll.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's faster? The coach or Ginny?
Or Ginny.
We'll start actually, at the same time.
Faster than a coach. Not bad. Not bad stats.
Yeah.
Well, I doubt
it. Just going like 300 miles.
All right, everybody. We will see you on Thursday.